Joshua 14. Now these are the areas the Israelites received as an inheritance in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest, Joshua son of Nun, and the heads of the tribal clans of Israel allotted to them. Their inheritances were assigned by lot to the 9.5 tribes as the Lord had commanded through Moses. Moses had granted the 2.5 tribes their inheritance east of the Jordan, but had not granted the Levites an inheritance among the rest. For the sons of Joseph had become 2 tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim. The Levites received no share of the land, but only towns to live in, with pasture lands for their flocks and herds. So the Israelites divided the land, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Now the men of Judah approached Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, "You know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God at Kadesh Barnea, about you and me? I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to explore the land. And I brought him back a report according to my convictions. But my brothers who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt with fear. I, however, followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. So on that day Moses swore to me, 'The land on which your feet have walked will be your inheritance and that of your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly.' Now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses, while Israel moved about in the desert. So here I am today, 85 years old. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. Now give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. You yourself heard then that the Anakites were there and their cities were large and fortified. But the Lord helping me, I will drive them out just as he said.' Then Joshua blessed Caleb son of Jephunneh and gave him Hebron as his inheritance. So Hebron has belonged to Caleb son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite ever since, because he followed the Lord, the God of Israel, wholeheartedly. Hebron used to be called Kiriat Arba, after Arba, who was the greatest man among the Anakites. Then the land had rest for more." Joshua 15. The allotment for the tribe of Judah, clan by clan, extended down to the territory of Edom, to the desert of Zin in the extreme south. Their southern boundary started from the bay at the southern end of the Salt Sea, crossed south of Scorpion Pass, continued on to Zin, and went over to the south of Kadesh Barnea. Then it ran past Hezron up to Adar, and curved around to Karka. It then passed along to Asmon and joined the Wadi of Egypt, ending at the sea. This was their southern boundary. The eastern boundary is the Salt Sea as far as the mouth of the Jordan. The northern boundary started from the bay of the sea at the mouth of the Jordan, went up to Beit Hogla, and continued north to Beit Arabah, to the stone of Bohan, son of Reuben. The boundary then went up to Debir from the valley of Achor and turned south to Gilgal, which faces the pass of Adumamim, south of the gorge. It continued along the waters of En-Shemesh and came out at En-Rogel. Then it ran up the valley of Ben-Hinnom, along the southern slope of the Jebusite city, that is, Jerusalem. From there, it climbed to the top of the hill west of the Hinnom Valley at the northern end of the Valley of Rephaim. From the hilltop, the boundary headed toward the spring of the waters of Naphtoah, came out at the towns of Mount Ephron, and went down toward Baalah, that is, Kiriat Jearim, Then it curved westward from Baalah to Mount Seir, ran along the northern slope of Mount Jearim, that is, Kesalon, continued to Beit Shemesh, and crossed to Timnah. It went to the northern slope of Ekron, turned toward Shikaron, passed along to Mount Baalah, and then reached Jabneel. The boundary ended at the sea. The western boundary is the coastline of the Great Sea. These are the boundaries around the people of Judah by their clans. In accordance with the Lord's command to him, Joshua gave Caleb, son of Jephunneh, a portion in Judah, Kiriath Arba, that is, Hebron. Arba was the forefather of Anak. From Hebron, Caleb drove out the three Anakites, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, descendants of Anak. From there, he marched against the people living in Debir, formerly called Kiriath Sefer. And Caleb said, "I will give my daughter Aksa in marriage to the man who attacks and captures Kiriath Sefer." Othniel, son of Kenaz, Caleb's brother, took it. So Caleb gave his daughter Aksa to him in marriage. One day, she came to Othniel. She urged him to ask her father for a field. When she got off her donkey, Caleb asked her, "What can I do for you?" She replied, "Do me a special favor. Since you have given me land in the Negev, give me also springs of water." So Caleb gave her the upper and lower springs.
Thank you, Jeff, for reading that for us. Before beginning, does anybody have any questions regarding chapter 14 and 15?
I just want to know who the surveyor was who did all this work. You know, it seems like such an incredibly precise
detailed
waypoints that he mentions here.
Very true. Actually, it lists sort of who the surveyors were back in Numbers. We'll discuss that in a minute. Any other questions or comments? Okay. I want to discuss chapter 14. The reason why I hadn't read as well as part of 15 is the story of Caleb. We're about to leave Caleb, by the way. This is pretty much where his story ends. It recaps a small portion of basically this particular passage, chapter 15, is recapped again in Book of Judges, the first chapter. But Caleb's story, that's pretty much it. Joshua's story still continues as he continues to divide the land up, but Caleb's, we're leaving him, though he's younger and was just there, he was long there with Joshua, just as long, against the other 10 spies. So we'll just read a little bit about it. Who was he? What kind of man was he? Why did he get this blessing of Hebron and the territory around it? What was so unique about Caleb compared to anybody else? First of all, noted that, a little map up here, where Hebron approximately is basically right in the dead center of Judah's territory. Try to write sideways. That's Hebron. almost dead on, 3,000 foot elevation. It's on its own mountain. It's its own territory, its own space. It is also a very famous location in the Book of Genesis. How many of you heard the Cave of Machpelah or know what it is?
I've heard of it.
Heard of it. Okay. We call a little bit. Abraham, story of Abraham. All right. Where was his wife buried?
Yeah.
Cave of Machpelah.
Yeah.
He bought it. He bought it from the king of Hebron at the time. Now, it obviously was not called Hebron. It was called, I'm not a very good pronouncer of this particular name, Kirjath. I'm not going to look it right off the top of my head here. Kirjath Arba, I guess is what it is. Yeah. Which is Hebron. Kirjath just means city of Arba. Arba is the father of the Anakites. Nothing very impressive. However, in this territory was Debir, which is a short distance away, and which Othniel, Caleb's half-brother, he had the same father, or no, sorry, same mother, different father. Caleb's mother remarried, by the way, a man by the name of Kenaz. Caleb's called a Kenazite. Technically, his father was Junifei or something like that. I forgot his name out of hand. Different father. Othniel has a different father than Caleb, but they have the same mom. Not against the rules for having marriage intermingling. That's not a big deal at the time, but that's what the story, how it works out. Caleb's descendants control this area for hundreds and hundreds of years. They are the biggest family in that territory, at least throughout up until, and partially going into, David's kingdom. Their people still occupied Hebron. One thing about it is Hebron was actually given to the Levites. So Caleb had an odd scenario. He said, please give me this territory. He takes it, but it's actually designated to a Levite city. Later on, it gets dedicated to Levite city. So he doesn't get to keep the city, per se, in his possession. But all the mountain that city belongs to is still his. So he still gets, obviously, financial reward as well as territory that belongs to him. Going a little bit Jewish tradition. Those of you who recall, there were 12 spies originally sent out to spy out the land, which Jeff had brought up, makes you wonder who surveyed this. Well, it took a long time, those 12 spies, to map out the land, but they did. They did precisely this. They mapped out where a city's located, what is at what location. Now, the actual boundaries, which Jeff just read, were listed back in Numbers. As far as this will be your southern border, it describes in the book of Numbers, I believe it's chapter 34, describes the southern border, the eastern border, the sea, the northern border, and what cities dictate that territory. All these, I have these little lines scribbled out here. These are all the small various towns that divide Judah's from anybody else's. Simeon, by the way, is also going to be intermingled here down as well. He gets a few of these cities that are in Judah's territory. It's the largest area, landmass, and cities. They got the best. Why? Joshua studied Torah very well. And he knew that in Numbers 34, he has rules to follow. It says, all right, you will get these individual leaders together. You will divvy up the land by casting lots and giving according to the tribe's size. So your tribe was largest. All right, is this city yours? Or is this city belong to the tribe north of you? Is this the where, which, the, these borders are the borders, but not necessarily which where the city lies on one side of the border or the other. Judah was cast, this was cast out by lots. So Judah got these towns. Now, you will notice that as we go into further chapters, Benjamin, which is just north of them, as well as Dan's territory on the side, though Dan never takes that territory, it's still allotted to him. There are some cities that are just on one side of the border. You could practically throw a rock and hit the other one on the other side of the border. I mean, they're short distances. The casting of lots, that's what it does. You don't know which city is going to be yours, which city is going to be the next guy's. Oh, well, that's how lots usually work. And the high priest, of course, has to be there. Again, this is all recorded in Numbers chapter 34. The exact border as well as the procedure on how to do this. But Caleb in particular I want to focus on. This is a gentleman of, correct me, not a Gentile. This is a man of unique abilities and unique philosophies in his time. We first meet Caleb back in Numbers 13, when he's first described as one of the men going out to spy out the land. Jewish tradition kind of describes which person who was listed went to what area. They did this, based this on what territory was actually given to that nation. So they figured, all right, Caleb, he was listed, he's from the tribe of Judah, what territory did he
look over?
Well, most likely the territory that wound up being, or at least a general area, part of Judah. Recording sound, towns, recording cities, sizes of cities. Well, how wonderful or fruitful is the territory or the land? You have Benjamin and Dan, various other, each of those men listed in Numbers 13 and 14 are going throughout this territory looking out their own space, doing the surveying, as Jeff questioned, who actually did this. They record these names down. Caleb, according to Jewish tradition, he sought after the cave of Machpelah. He went to find it. In particular. I mean, the others, in Jewish tradition, they all went to their own territories, but he in particular sought to find the cave that Abraham purchased. Again, the reason they argue is because that's where he wanted to be at one with God. I believe it's territory that is legally theirs. They bought it, belongs to them. He wanted to go there and find it. Hence, he wanted that territory. Now, according to the Bible, according to the Torah, Caleb was told when he returned and he advocated, we can do this. Yes, these people are enormous. And by the way, Caleb didn't just select any area. The cave of Machpelah happens to be the location, where it's mentioned out here, where the giants are located at. That is the least desirable location to want because it is the most amount of work to get it. He desired that one spot. And he came back and said, yes, they're big. We see the fact they're big. But with God's on our side, he has removed their support, their protection. We can take them. Just don't rebel against God because then that protection may go away again. This is 45 years ago, or far as earlier than when he actually receives. Arguing this alongside Joshua, who was also observing territory. Guess where Joshua most likely went? Well, he's from the tribe of Ephraim. He probably did not go along with Caleb. He probably surveyed the territory of Ephraim, just north of them. Note, Joshua entered in through the Dead Sea, and guess where he first started to go to? Territory he was familiar with. The stuff that he was... The other 10 spies who observed and recorded information, they're all dead. No one can tell him details about those other areas. However, he still remembers the details in his own territory. He knew the details that Caleb had for the tribe of Judah because he observed that territory. Those are the two spots he went to first. Makes logical sense. You're a general. That's your job. Do what you're familiar with. Do what you can do well. He did his job. So why would Caleb want this particular location, other than the cave of Machpelah is a short distance away, easy traveling to distance if you wish to visit, why would he want the word that is the most difficult place to take? Has a little bit of the personality of who he was. Most of the characters in the Bible, they have their personalities in their stories. Oh, well, he likes this, or he likes that, or he did this because of that. You can get a general idea of who they were. Caleb is a unique personality. There aren't very many that actually have the amount of faith that he portrays and gives. Says, yes, we can take out these large, massive giants. But the caution that goes with that faith. Both locations, both times, in this particular case, I believe it is, which we just read, Caleb's spiel about in chapter 14, where he spoke to the fact that verse, I think it's 7, oh, verse 8, okay. Actually, this whole section. Well, I'll read that again. I'm sorry, verse 7. I was 40 years old when Moses, servant of God, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. I brought back word from his. It was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren went up with me, made the heart of the people melt. I wholly followed the Lord my God. That's the key one. This type of personality this gentleman is. This guy is. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance. And your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. Now behold, the Lord has kept me alive. He has said, these 45 years, ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses. While Israel wandered the wilderness, and now here I am this day, 85 years old. As yet I am as strong this day as I was the day that Moses has sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. I'm going to stop a second here. He credits God for the fact that he's still alive. That's another key feature of him. He followed God wholeheartedly. Now, by the way, this is not the only place that's recorded the fact he followed God wholeheartedly. It points out in Judges, that is the reason he got this territory. It puts it out in Deuteronomy chapter 1, that is the reason he got this territory, as well as in Numbers when Moses gave it to him. This is the reason you are getting this territory, because you followed God wholeheartedly. It's unique in his time. Not very many people were doing that. Joshua was probably one of them. No argument there. Aaron, Moses, yes, those men followed God wholeheartedly. Of his generation, was there anyone else? No. Phinehas is probably the next closest argument, or Eleazar, Aaron's two sons. That's it. Out of all the people of Israel, these are the only few that actually believed and followed God to the best of their ability, wholeheartedly. He in particular is singled out as saying, this is the reason you are getting blessed. He gives God credit for the fact that he's still alive. 45 years old. He's 85 years old. That's not that common to be able to go to war at 85 years old. I don't care who you are. That's a lot of work to do. Joshua was much older, 110 I think at this time. He was still going to war also. Very unusual. Nobody else in their army was going to war at this time. Well, not at those ages. They were all dead. These people are a good 40. Everybody in the army is 40 years younger. So Caleb's 85. The next guy below him is 40 years younger than he is. That's a lot. It's a lot of huge age difference. And he says, I'm going to do this anyway. Jewish tradition. How many men did Caleb take with him to take out Hebron? None. Jewish tradition, it was none. He may have had one, nobody knows. Jewish tradition, it was one, none. The reason I say none is because of, again, who he was. He relied primarily on God to do everything for him. He was able to take out Hebron, and even if he had help, it doesn't make any difference. He desires the most difficult location to take to prove something. To prove something that 45 years earlier he said would be the case. That though these people are enormous, though they are the biggest, I tell you back in, actually we'll go back here real quick, Numbers chapter 14. Oh no, sorry, chapter 13. Verse 30. Then Caleb quieted, this is after the spies reported the fact that how difficult this territory is going to be. Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are all able to overcome it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go against people, for they are stronger than we. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report in the land. And they spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone as spies is a land to devour its inhabitants. All the people whom we saw are of great stature. We saw giants and descendants of Anak from the giants. We were like grasshoppers in our own sight, so we are in their sight. The congregation lifted up their voices and cried. The people wept all night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, the whole congregation. If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or we had just died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the hand of the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? They continued on, and Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land from their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of Israel, saying, the land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread to be consumed. He has an intense amount of faith to note that God will do this for us. But he points out, if. He may have faith, but he has an element of practicality. I liken him to the friends of Daniel. They were asked, is your God going to save you in this furnace? Well, they said, yes, he can, if he chooses to. Caleb, I think at this point, even though it was much early in his life and walk with God, realized that yes, God is all powerful. He can do whatever he chooses. But the point is, the chooses part. God still chooses what he's going to do and what he's not going to do. Caleb realized that. He followed God wholeheartedly anyway, but yet he points out, if the Lord finds favor in us, this is what he will do. So Caleb's point, 45 years later, in Hebron is well made. He goes out and takes out this territory, well beyond what one man would do. If it was one man, I don't know. But if just in case it was, well beyond what one man could do, removes and casts out these three individuals who, by the way, move on to Gaza Strip. They don't die, they just move somewhere else. To prove that God has found favor in Caleb. He had found favor, of course, in Moses and Aaron, Joshua. Eleazar was alive at that time, so was Phinehas, so probably all of those men. He did find favor, and this was an evident proof that says, hey, yeah, he found favor. I can show you. So he took out Hebron, and it was his. Now, the whole territory, obviously, I mentioned earlier, it was a large mountain that Hebron lives on, or sits on, well defended. Now, as I brought out to you 2 weeks ago, the Bible points out that Joshua took Hebron. So why is it now, in chapter 15, as well as in Judges chapter 1, describes that Caleb took out Hebron? Do we recall what the reason was? Probably not. I barely recall it. Joshua's taking out of territories and cities was to go in, conquer the armies, and leave. They all went back to Gilgal or various campsites. Why? Because they had to conquer the territory before you get to divide it up, before anybody else gets to inherit it. So Joshua's army of all the children of Israel come in and take out a city and its army, they leave,
right,
allowing the few inhabitants that survived to stay there and continue to dwell and to work for upwards of about 5 to 7 years when Caleb finally comes back in Hebron and takes it over yet again. Hence why Jewish tradition says he did it by himself. Because it doesn't say the children of Israel came back and helped Caleb. It says Caleb drove these men out. Othniel, who took out Debir, which is a few miles away. It doesn't say the entire children of Judah or Israel came and took out Debir. No, it says Othniel drove out the few inhabitants, attacked it, and took it over. It had already been wiped out. The army was already taken out. It was just a matter of the few inhabitants that were left. So Caleb and Othniel took over, their family took over Hebron and Debir and the cave of Machpelah. Jewish tradition, because Caleb wanted to know where Abraham lived and where Abraham purchased the territory, he spied out the southern section to find the cave of Machpelah. Once he located it, that's the place he wanted to keep. He went to Joshua to say, hey, I want this spot. Of all the spies who are there, was this the only place that Caleb walked? No. He walked all over this territory. Over the coast, along the lines of Dead Sea, down the south. He knew the territory. Which one did he select? Hebron. The most difficult place in order to prove his statement 45 years earlier that yes, this area is luscious. This is great territory. Wonderful. Land flowing milk and honey. And the people are large. But God's help, we can do it. We can take them out. Caleb's faith,
right,
was very strong to do that. How many of us could say the same? Well, most of us would say, you know what? Sorry, I'll watch from a distance. I'll view the documentary later. I don't want to actually go out there and do it. I'll believe you and just tell me the story later. I don't want to live through it. Well, Caleb's, I'm going to live through it at 85 years old. I'm going to live through it. I'm going to do this. Othniel, 40 years younger than him, took out Debir later. It was shortly thereafter. And of course got his cousin, I don't know, niece, whatever it is, as a spouse. Caleb lives in this territory for quite a few years, actually. He doesn't die at 85. He dies Jewish many years later. His descendants continued to live there all the way through David's time. His descendants were not necessarily the same quality and caliber as Caleb was. Note that when God chooses someone and says, I am with this person, I'm going to bless this person, it is not necessarily going to be the same for all of their descendants. He's selected one. I lose my little notebook. He selected one at the time with Caleb. His descendants, God actually killed a few of them because he didn't like them. At least one he didn't like. Because of just how he treated the people around him. But, so Caleb's progeny was no guarantee that they were going to continue on, thrive, and occupy the territory. But Caleb wasn't concerned with that. He proved a point. He took a Hebron at 85 years old, drove out three giants, at least three. They're probably their spouses were there too. I imagine they had little kids also and a few other whatever else was around. Took the area, territory, received God's blessing, just as God had promised, and Moses had promised, because he followed God wholeheartedly. He had an abundance of faith, but still knew something about God, that God has to choose to bless you. If God will bless us, if God sees fit, he will do this for us. And he demonstrates that. I like Caleb. I think he's a great man. There's a reason why the Bible records him so in his story. Yes, Jeff.
Bill had a question.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
For the victory, that'd be kind of like what James says about faith without works.
Yes. Faith without works. That's an exact perfect point. Caleb's faith did have works. He actually put money where his mouth is, kind of thing. He said he could do it. His faith, he proved it. That's a great point. Thank you, Bill. Any other comments about Caleb's story before I continue on?
Yeah, because it's a very, very challenging thing about putting faith into action, because you would think it gets into the point of where do you draw the line in faith versus presumption. You know, I mean, it's one thing to be ambitious in your faith, and it's another thing to go attack giants.
Very true. And that is a lesson that the children of Israel had to wind up learning when the spies first came back and gave the report. The children said, oh, it's too dangerous. But then when they found out they were going to be punished for 40 years, said, oh, never mind. We'll go back and we'll do this. We can take them out. God's on our side, even though they were explicitly told, no, he's not. They learned the hard way that putting your faith in action is difficult to do. But when you know something alternate is the case and you still do it, you're no longer acting on faith. You're acting on presumption. You're acting on your own accord. You are choosing to do something because you want to go do it. In spite of the fact you were told you are not to do it. Difficult lesson that many have to learn. Actually, we all have to learn at one point in our lives. That's just common human nature. The way it's almost a few more times than others, unfortunately for me. But any of the comments regarding Caleb's story? I'm going to move on a little bit to his daughter. It's only a brief few comments here regarding what she was after. Now, Debir is actually slightly further south than Hebron. Debir's name is the city of the book. That's actually what its name technically is. Debir is a different name for it. The Kiriath Sefer is the city of the book. Judah's territory, as we all know, is southern Israel. Very dry. Very little rain. Most of their rain and most of their territory of weather that's palatable to people is up in the northern section. Down south of Hebron, you're getting quite arid, as she pointed out. There's no water here, Dad. I need some help. Othniel, now, it's one thing that Jewish tradition, which I cite them because they have interesting perspectives at times. Othniel was an honorable person. He became one of the judges of Israel for, I think, I forgot how many years he was a judge. Many decades. 40 to 60 years, something like that. It's a long time he was the judge. Which, what does it mean to be a judge? Somebody recall? Well, judges in particular are designed to instruct you as far as what God wants through prophecy, because they have an ear to God. They talk to him frequently and say, hey, that's not what was in God's plan, or yes, that is in God's plan. To distinguish what is right and wrong, and to lead people. Othniel did those things, which was Caleb's younger brother, 40 years younger than him, or roughly at least 40 years younger than him. He winds up ruling or judging Israel shortly after Joshua's death. Othniel, though, was a great, courageous person to take on Debir, which probably took it with maybe himself, maybe a few others were with him. No one knows. It doesn't really matter. Jewish tradition faults him because he was not courageous to go back to Caleb and ask himself. You see, it took Caleb's daughter to say, hold on, Othniel, after she met him, as it points out in verse 18, thank you. Now so when she came to him, meaning Othniel, that she persuaded him to ask her father for a field. She persuaded Othniel to ask her father for a field. So she dismounted from her donkey, and Caleb said, what do you wish? And she answered, give me a blessing, since you have given me land the south, give me also springs. And he gave the springs of the upper and lower springs in the territory, which is a little bit of water in the area. They fault Othniel because she was saying, come on, let's go ask him. Normally, if you were asking a request from your spouse's father, your wife's father, you as the man are supposed to go do it. You do not have your wife go do it. That is a, quote, gutless, end of quote, term in Judaism. You don't have your wife go ask her dad for you and your benefit. You ask him as a man to a man. You ask. Othniel did not. Why? It's his brother. Why not?
It's his uncle.
Actually, it's his brother. He says the son of Kenaz. Othniel is Caleb's brother. Kenaz is Caleb's stepfather. It's his half-brother. Not only brother, but half-brother, stepbrother, whatever you call it. Oh. Same mother, different fathers.
Because Othniel is actually Ashkenaz's half-uncle, and then they became husband and wife. But they were originally uncle and niece.
Right.
Yeah, she was his aunt, right?
No. She would not be his aunt. She would be
his niece.
His niece, yeah.
His niece. Well, like half-niece.
Well, yeah, it's... Like I said, incestual issues are not an issue at this point in time. So it's kind of the question that we look at today. As long as their mothers are separate, biblically speaking, up until it is forbidden, which is explained later on, it's not an issue. So as long as the mother's not the same, the father's biology doesn't make a difference. And in her case, her mother was obviously not the same as Othniel's mother, so it didn't matter. They were fine. Anyway, I won't go into incest too far because it's kind of questionable. Today's standards would be completely absurd. We would never do such a thing, but that's not an issue at their point in time. Anyway, so you do not normally ask your wife to go ask her father for a blessing. You do it yourself. So that's one thing that Judaism gets him. Why does he avoid Caleb? Why does he not ask Caleb himself? Most argue because he revered his older brother. Caleb was the head of the entire tribe. He wasn't just anybody. He was the senior. He dictated who did what and when they got their blessing. He revered him. Maybe more so, maybe less, to his detriment or to his blessing. I don't really know. It doesn't really matter. But it was just interesting. I happen to like the fact that Caleb's daughter had to go and ask her dad, hey, will you please help this? We need help. And Othniel, though I'm sure wanted it, because you pointed out she persuaded him, wouldn't go do it himself. He probably feared Caleb. Most likely, feared meaning not petrified of him, but feared meaning revered him. Held him in high esteem. That's my personal opinion, though, as to why Othniel did not ask Caleb himself for the upper and lower springs, or any water for that matter. So I like his wife. She's a spunky person. Now she asked for water. What did Caleb give her? Double what she asked. The upper and lower springs. Now, I do not know personally where those springs are located in Hebron. I don't have, you know, topographical maps that spell out exactly water low sources. But I'm assuming they're probably somewhere near the southern end where Debir is located. I couldn't tell you for sure. Like I said, Hebron's on top of a mountain, 3,000 foot elevation. Debir is much lower. I think it's somewhere around about 1,500 feet elevation. So there's probably upper lower springs is most likely on the mountain of Hebron, where these springs are located. But I can't swear to it. I don't know. Now, I had Jeff stop. I did not wish him to read verses 20 through 63. Lots and lots and lots of names. So, yeah, you're welcome. They're difficult names. Unlike the previous week, which I rattled off names and translated them out, which gave you a brief, you know, concept. It, mind you, it's not biblically like, oh, this is the word of God. No, it's translation of names. That's all it is. It's just a brief story. It's kind of interesting. It's interesting facts. That's pretty much it. Don't take it beyond that. This territory, this section, it doesn't have one little quick, simple message. It actually has multiple ones in the next list of names that are all the 60-some-odd cities that are in the area of Judah. I'm still in the process of converting them, so I had to have him stop because I can't convert them all. It took a long time to get what I do have, and I'll get more detail on that hopefully next week when I'll be able to explain a little bit as far as what the, I still type it up. I forgot about that. I'll be able to explain a little bit more about this. They do discuss a little bit about some of Israel's past up to this point and a little bit about their future. Now, each of its own tribe gets various cities listed under their names. And a few of them have messages that are easy to understand, meaning that my brain can figure out what is being said, at least to the best of my ability. Now, most of you may be questioning, what gives any legitimacy to converting names into translations? Is that just a little tidbit of worthless information that somebody just decides to do? No, actually, it's not. It's quite standard in Judaism. If they are, if the Jewish scholars look at a section that has lots of names, and it's confusing to them, sometimes those names, in this particular instance, it says there are 29 cities in one area alone of Judah, but in fact it lists out 32 cities, they say, what happened? Well, because some of those names aren't names of locations, they're messages. So what they do, they take those names and start converting them over. What are these messages actually trying to say? It's a common practice. Hence, I brought up to you last week, it's an interesting practice. It's not a gospel, it's not Torah, it's just interesting to note. How fascinating, there's prophecies written in these names. So next week, hopefully we'll cover a little more about that when I get the rating like six names, I haven't quite figured out what they mean yet, finished off. Any other questions or comments before I call it quits? Any comments about Caleb? Well, thank you for your time. I hope Caleb is a slight inspiration to each of us. I believe he was an inspiration to his entire tribe, as far as what he did and all the people of Israel, the what he chose to do. And he was willing to do it at a very old age and willing to sacrifice whatever it took to do it. I think it's a great, great story of that man and who he was, what he stood for. Thank you.